bullish. I think corporate travel is going to come back differently. It's not going to come back in the classic way it left pre-pandemic, but I think there will be so many new ways and new means by which people are going to want to travel. Video conference, I've said this many, many times over the last 2 years, there's nothing inherent about video conferencing that keeps people from traveling. Video conferencing actually enables mobility, lets you take your office with you, enables flexibility. And every time we see technology that enhances mobility and communication, it just gives people more reason to want to be together. So I think corporate travel is going to be just fine. And the fact that we're already 60% back is a good testament to that, Jay, with the world just starting to open up just in the last month.
And could you create everybody's minds? And sort of the waves of the pond are beginning to sort of even out of pandemic, and the rocks be thrown in at Ukraine. Just a small, you don't see a real problem with the Ukraine issues and Russia going forward.
Well, we haven't seen it on the demand side. Now, I know in Europe, I'm sure some of the local markets are experiencing that. We don't fly to Russia, we don't fly to Kiev. And our partners probably are seeing a little bit more of an impact locally than we are. Certainly seeing its impact on commodities, fuel prices being the significant one. $100 oil prices are not something that we haven't already dealt with in the past. We went through several years, the earlier part of the last decade, where oil averaged north of $100 a barrel, and the airlines did just fine. It just takes some time for that impact to be filtered through and passed through the pricing systems, but I think we'll get there.
But then you're a refinery, so you're probably slightly hedged. You don't hedge per se.
Well, there's always a big debate about hedging. I know in Europe there's a lot of hedging that's done by the airlines. We don't hedge anything as an airline. We think the best hedge is by producing our own.
You have a refinery outside of Heathrow, it'll be interesting.
Yep.
Put it onto the bill. What were some of the priorities that guided Delta through the pandemic response? We know you did well there, but at that time.
Well, I think the single biggest thing that we focused on through the pandemic was keeping our team together, keeping our people's spirits buoyed, keeping the optimism. You know, I think this has been such a difficult period for so many of us, not just our industry, the world. How we were all isolated and sent to quarantine or sent to isolation. We needed to keep people focused that we're going to come out of this, and we're going to come out of this with a better resilience than we went in, with a lot of learning. Protecting our people, protecting our health, protecting our liquidity, protecting our future. You know, we were in a mode of protection. And while we didn't know how long it was going to take, and we weren't ready for all the subsequent variants as they started to pop up, we wanted to make certain that as each succeeding variant came, we were even better prepared and managed through it as we've done. The technology is in place. We don't need to fear this virus. We really don't. And I know the world is, this is not an audience that is a fearful audience by definition. If you're in the aviation space, that's not a new message. But we gotta remind people why aviation exists. Aviation exists to bring connection, to bring people together, to bring opportunity. I was mentioned to Carl, I can't imagine some of the prior meetings of the Aviation Club on Zoom. Hopefully those are relics that you put in some museum someday, you know, never to return again.
Yes.
But the energy you get from being together in this room and you know, the meetings and the opportunities we've had as we've come back out again, is powerful, and we need to keep people mindful of the purpose and the mission we play, rather than the reasons not to be together, which is that we have power for that.
And we discussed earlier about, there's another point which I keep bashing on about, is of aviation generically as a sector needs to be more cohesive and speaking as one about what aviation brings to the world. We will not be where we are today, culturally, politically, philosophically, socially, everything without aviation.
Right.
And at the moment, we're still slightly different dogs. We are the people that are single-handedly polluting the North Pole, or whatever. And we need to, easier to say, but generically as an industry.
Yeah. Well, sustainability is the biggest challenge we have. I say that all the time. We shouldn't shy away from that. It is. But it's not something that our industry can solve. And by saying we're going to do less of what we do and somehow fix the problem is not a sustainable solution. So It's working with governments on solutions that bring energy producers, that bring real solutions to bear. It's working with our OEMs on new forms of propulsion and technology. There's many, many things we can do over time. I often use the automotive industry for our own industry as an illustration. 20 years ago, they saw the problem that they were going to have, and the efforts that they began then, which eventually led into the electrical vehicle explosion that you see going on around the world, and real commitments in terms of change. It took a long time, but eventually the consumers caught on, and the consumers started to invest alongside the OEMs and the autos and the governments. And we've got to bring all of the different constituencies together, which, by the way, is not just the Boeings and Airbus and GEs, it's the lessor community, it's the hotel community, it's the agency community, it's everyone that depends on travel. So the airlines are sitting at the crux of this, and we have to be the impetus to continue to drive. But it's such a big ecosystem that depends on what we do. And over time, I'm convinced we can bring that same energy to it.
And government action and government achieves important. In fact, it's a great segue, I think, to the question about you've just appointed your first chief sustainability officer, Pam Fletcher. So a little bit more about that and how you...
Yeah, so Pam comes to us from General Motors. She led a lot of the new developments at GM, and I brought her for lots of reasons, but one of the reasons is that she's already seen that evolution that the autos did. Yeah. And just as the autos have done it on the ground, we've got to do that in the sky.
Busy times. This question, Delta, how is Delta viewing its global partnerships, such as both Atlantic Air, France, Air, and the like, in its recovery phase?
Well, it's been a challenging time. You know, as we've watched, not just with Virgin Atlantic and the challenges we have here, but whether it's in Latin America, we're investors in LOTAM Group, Air Mexico, Korean Air, Air France KLM, China Eastern, and every international airline around the world that did not receive some form of government support found itself in a very, very difficult position. And the U.S. industry would not have come through this time had it not been for our U.S. government standing behind and providing support to keep our people employed, recognize it as an essential service that we will get through. At the same time, the pandemic has reaffirmed the fact that our long-term future is global, and it is the opportunity to not just be partners, but to be involved, engaged in providing global solutions. And we have concluded many, many years ago that the best way to do that is actually putting your own capital to bear. It's not just so you're at risk, not just as a commercial venture, but as a strategic. And so we're pleased to stand by the Virgin Group as they went through. And while there were plenty of sleepless nights that Shai and his team had and that we had, and tough decisions to be made, the fact that we came through this together is going to make our bond that much stronger.
Well, the concept is never a free lunch. Shai's actually agreed to speak at the club in December, so we can tell us about that. I can round them early. So you see your global network is really important in the next phase going forward.
Yeah, the majority of our profits are made in the U.S. I think everyone can appreciate that. Huge local market. But we've run out of places to fly in the U.S. There's not new destinations or new airports. The congestion is already at a limit. So long-term, our growth has to be international by international.
Well, I'll start my James Gordon bit here and take some questions from the floor. And I now have some from table O and also from table D. So first question from anybody? Let me stand up and see. So I'll take questions from the floor. Have you got the mics available? So who's first? Over here, quickly, over here, if we can. And then we'll come to. Oh, okay, fine, sure.
If Carl sits down, then I can see.
I'm going to stay standing throughout your question.
I'm not right around there, just a couple of questions. You had a code share agreement with Aeroflot, which I suppose is now sort of suspended.
Yeah.
Whether it comes back or not will depend, I guess, on the political situation. Do you fly over the Russian? If you do, now you're going to have to fly a little bit longer and spend more time on fuel. Would that impact the new menus that you're bringing up? In order to save the cost.
Yeah. Well, it is taking us a bit longer to fly over to Asia. Asia has been the part of our business that hasn't returned yet. China, Japan, Korea, important markets for Delta. But as those markets return, then we'll have to. But yes, we suspended, in fact, flying in Russian airspace well before they started the, as soon as the concern started to break out that they might start an invasion.
Make table J, and I think we have one from table H thereafter. And then we'll be
right there. Yeah, Bridget Stokes, semi-retired. Can I ask a question about IT?
Sure.
You're one of the few major airlines that hasn't succumbed to the charms of Amadeus or Sabre. Will that change? And do you have any thoughts about what your future IT plans will be?
You know, technology is our lifeblood. At Delta, like many things, like owning a refinery, we brought in-house a lot of the technology many, many years ago. You know, technology for us, is particularly, you know, kind of moving off the mainframe and the legacy systems, now we're going to the cloud. So we've got a big migration with AWS that we're in the midst of. Gotten asked the question many times here in Europe, are we a fan or not of the GDSs and those technology and the challenges? You know, we are a fan of the any place that our product can get a fair representation and we can get a premium for the services we offer. So we haven't backed away from the GDS environment. And increasingly, our future is digital. So you know, our people can no longer, we no longer have the experience that we can go into the old mainframes and cobble together a set of codes and kind of punching away furiously to try to get systems fixed and records fixed. Our people know they have to move with more agility to a digital strategy. So technology is important to us, it will continue to be important to us, and we've got great technology partners along that way.
Thank you, Chris, on the table. Yes, let's take a look.
Thank you. Brendan Barrett from Mace Advisory. I have a sustainability question. And to what extent are your customers willing to pay for the additional cost of sustainable fuels, so synthetic aviation fuel? And are you considering spreading the additional cost over all tickets?
Yeah. Well, eventually it has to be borne by our customers, you know, in some fashion, or else we don't have a sustainable business. And with the push on SAF to create partnerships, it's going to take some time. We're working with all of our main customers, our big customers, who are investing alongside us. I think we've had over 40 of our big corporates who have made pledges and made investments in SAF technology and research that they get credit back for on their own sustainable journey for their own business models. But over time, if we can't get our customers engaged with us, it's going to be very hard for this industry to you know, bear the full price of that. But our customers have to believe, and the product has to be out there, and the investment in the technology has to be brought out there, which governments need to step in the gap here, and that's what we're doing in the U.S. And fortunately, we have administration in the U.S. that's very receptive to that.
Hello, Ed. Ian Fife-Ray from Thomas UK. A question I would ask any CEO at the moment. You've weathered much over the last few years, lots of challenges at the moment you've gone through. But what is it that's keeping you awake at night now? What's on the horizon?
What's it that keeps me awake? You know, I never stopped, you know, being paranoid. I mean, so just because COVID occurred, we didn't wake up all of a sudden and so who moves our, you know, this is an industry that's been through bankruptcies, restructurings, fuel spikes, wars, viruses, not at the scope that we went through. I think the single biggest thing right now that's on my radar is making sure that we're prepared to fully bring our service levels where they need to be, staffing, the quality of the service, the premium service that Delta is known for. That's going to win in the marketplace. If there was one thing that led us through the pandemic, it's the premium that Delta provides in the marketplace. And that continues to this day. Because, you know, customers, despite the fact that when the pandemic started, everyone thought it was going to be a game now for the low-cost guys, that they were going to have their way, and the premium carriers were going to get disintermediated. Reality is that it's just the opposite. Is that the pandemic shone the spotlight on those that were premium and those that took wellness seriously and those that focused on providing better service levels, they were the winners. And I think that's true of every industry, period. And Delta stands out at the top in the aviation space on that.
Thank you.
Sorry, no, we'll come here first and then we'll go to the East Indian Club. So,
thank you for being plain freelance consultant. Apart from your ownership of the refinery, are there any other reasons you don't hedge fuel?
Because I've lost a lot of money doing it. I'm lucky I answered because we used to hedge back, 10, 12, 14, 15 years ago. And cumulatively, and I venture to say this is true of every airline out there, period, that if you go back and look at whether it was a successful endeavor or not, they paid a pretty big price. They paid more for fuel than had they not hedged. And the other thing to me that's important about this, and I understand if you're a smaller carrier, you've got to have more risk control and whatnot, and you've got to protect your balance sheet. We can sustain a fuel spike. Our friends at Virgin don't have that same appetite, so I get that. But the other thing you have to realize is that you need to figure out ways in which that cost of that fuel is built and integrated into your business, into your pricing model, into your service level. The quality of what you do has to bear the full cost of your operation. And hedging is just a short term. It buys you time, but it also, I think, puts you a little bit on your back legs. Carriers have been known to use those fuel hedge profits to try to drive market share and pricing down. Southwest did that for years in the U.S. Didn't wind up actually helping them over time. They wound up driving a lot of the U.S. industry into bankruptcy as a result, and came back now with even lower prices to go against Southwest. So hedging is a good short-term measure if you need the risk control or risk management tool. But long-term, I don't think it's necessarily healthy for our business.
Great, we'll take one for there, and then we'll do Malcolm at the end.
Oliver Ransom from Airline Revenue at Night. Since Delta SkyMiles went revenue-based a few years ago, we started seeing multi-million mile business class redemptions. But these multi-million mile fares are based on cash fares that actually nobody pays, because almost everybody paying these fares is getting a corporate discount of some kind. So the seats which are meant to be rewards for loyalty are arguably priced higher than the market rate for cash. What's the impact of this on your best customers?
Well, I could talk on that question for a long time, but the underlying premise for us is that we wanted to make our SkyMiles currency and cash agnostic. But yeah, we didn't want to do so. But when we took away the tables and we took away those exchange rates that people had kind of locked in for 20 years and allowed the market to price the seat, whether you're using miles or using cash, that's exactly what we've done. And I'll tell you, the question about corporate rates and discounts, we've pulled our overall product prices for premium way down over time. It, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the tickets up front used to be priced for corporate, and retail was many times 10x what it would be to sit in the main cabin. Now that differential is down, not maybe as much as transatlantic, but generally is down to not much more than 2 to 3 times. And it's priced for money. The reality is we've got the most popular currency in SkyMiles program in the world. And American Express, which is our biggest partner, that's the biggest card they have in their entire world portfolio. So I think our strategy is working pretty well.
I'll take a final question from Malcolm, I think.
Malcolm Ginsberg. In this country, we've regionalized very much in the last few years. We're very well established in Heathrow. You've got Frayne Shay and his colleagues in Manchester, and you've got the occasional summer flights into Edinburgh. Is there any chance of going back to the Northwest scenario when you went into Gatwick and perhaps any other UK regional airports?
We don't have any plans at the moment.
So you won't be going from Southend to well, look, we are on the time constraints. We are the target straight. So I'll ask Jay Thompson, committee member of the aviation company.
So Ed, it is my very great honour and privilege on behalf of the Aviation Club Committee and all of our guests and members gathered here today, and it is great to see so many guests in your own entourage from Delta and some of our great friends from Virgin. So it's my great pleasure to thank you for coming over from Atlanta away and speaking to us in this prestigious room in the RAC Club today. And thank you also for sharing with us in your fireside chat with our esteemed chair, Paul Bridges, why Delta has navigated the pandemic with the strongest balance sheet amongst all of the US majors to remain amongst the most profitable airlines in the world, a fact which I think you were actually quite modest about, if I may say, and also why you are the most awarded airline. You didn't mention that either, but again, an accolade, and one of the best companies to work for in the US. On top of that, great to hear how you're working towards meeting your ambitious commitment to carbon neutrality, something which we all need to be thinking about to ensure the long-term survival of our beloved industry. It's a truly impressive suite of accolades and a testimony to your great leadership. We do have our little bag of goodies for you to go away with. This is clearly your second bag of Aviation Club goodies. So
it's a different time.
is it a different time? I was going to say you're going to need to find a friend.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, I need to come listen to Shai's speech. I've been sitting for years. So. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Well, just a very final, again, thank you all for coming. Thank you all for coming. I will say the next lunch is on the 26th of April, so our AGM. And after that, we will be having a Dublin dinner on, I think, May the 7th. In fact, Gus Kelly here was one of our speakers. I just spoke to you there, Gus. Gus was one of our speakers at the Dublin dinner a couple of years ago. So we'll see you both in Dublin in May. Hopefully back here.